You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Turn holiday travel from stressful to rewarding. Rakuten helps you save big on travel. They give you cash back when you book with sites like Expedia, Best Western, and Hertz. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other rewards, like airline miles, credit card points, and hotel loyalty programs. Rakuten partners with over 3,700 stores, including Away Luggage, Ray-Ban, and Macy's, so you can be prepared with all the travel essentials, and of course, cute fits for your trip. Keep the rewards going with cash back on holiday gifts for friends and family. With Rakuten, you'll never miss out on savings at your favorite stores. The stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Join for free and start your shopping at Rakuten.com or use the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. Broadcasting veteran Derek Pearson.
When you find something that moves them, that makes them smile, celebrate it. That's your task. That's your superpower.
Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman.
Rifles a pass. It was tipped. It's picked off by Foreman. He's at the 15, 10, 5. He'll score!
On 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up? We're back. Jay Foreman, Austin Norman, Old School. Brought to you by the Mercado, Certified Piedmontese, Special Ingredients and Butcher Shop, 84th and Havelock, 30th and Yankee Hill, Lincoln locations, 168th and Maple up in Omaha. We're continuing this Bill Belichick in this article coming from ESPN, essentially saying that Robert Kraft called Arthur Blank and said, do not hire this man under any circumstances. And Arthur Blank took his word. And they talked about different teams, though. They talked about Tennessee with Rand Carthon, and they wanted the structure that they wanted a coach to work hand in hand with the GM. GM, you know, essentially buying the groceries and you making and cooking it. They talked about the Commanders as well with the new owner and Josh Harris
and the Magic Man.
And the Magic Man, that would have been a match made in heaven, him and Belichick. But they talked about all the different situations where they wanted a clear-cut GM and the coach. And then they felt like, I think they talked about Philly, and Philly loved them as well. I mean, of course, they've battled against him, and Philly felt like after 15 wins that he was going to hang it up. I don't think that was going to happen. I think Bill Belichick would try to obliterate the record. Mm-hmm. And so really, I think the crazy thing about it, as much respect as you should get for winning 7 Super Bowls and the dominance for 20 years that I saw firsthand, they used it against him not to hire him. Everything that made him successful, they were like, that's the reason why we're not going to hire you. Now, what we wondered was, when did it turn sour? How did it turn sour? Well, I could tell you where it went left. When it was, of course, Tom Brady's the greatest of all time. I'm sure he had an ego, but I think Tom Brady is known as a great teammate. He's humble. And he's obviously motivated internally like no other based on being overlooked. It became a battle of Tom Brady essentially becoming the New England Patriots. And then I felt like Bill Belichick wanted it to be him. Without hitting a essentially lottery ticket and drafting Tom Brady, I think with a comp pick, in round six. Don't pat yourself on the back. You passed on Tom Brady three or four times prior. And it all working out, we're not talking about Bill Belichick. So that pick, you got lucky. But it got to the point where Bill Belichick felt like Tom Brady was getting too much of the credit. And this is when he became a superstar. I think he was married before to a famous actress. I think they had a kid. And then he married Giselle, who's a iconic, model or whatever she is. And he was everywhere. Bill Belichick said, we're going to nip this in the bud because this is the Patriot way is Bill Belichick, the structure, the coach, the clock management, holding everybody accountable, working, no days off. Bill Belichick drafted Jimmy Garoppolo. Good looking dude, too. Good looking
GQ.
Dude. Yeah, good looking guy. And came in and it played well as a backup role. And look, everybody loves the backup. And he played well. Mm-hmm. And he felt like Jimmy G is just as good as this dude. We can get rid of him. And wanted to get rid of Tom Brady. And was talking about trading Tom Brady. Well, Tom said, listen, not so fast, my friend. I'm going right up to the owner. And I'm bringing it to Robert Kraft. Because I think Robert Kraft didn't know. Because Bill Belichick had all power. Mm. And once Tom Brady brought it to Robert Kraft.
Without having heard it from Belichick first.
Robert Kraft said, no, this is not happening. Matter of fact, here's what we're going to do. This is the greatest of all time. We're going to get rid of your little protege and send him out to San Francisco. Right then, the relationship changed completely. And here's also, I will say this. It's also on Robert Kraft because I think they were so successful. He had 100% confidence that Bill Belichick was going to do everything within how you expect him to do. Once he heard that, it completely changed.
There's a lot there. Was the worst part trying to trade Tom Brady, or was it Robert Kraft trading Jimmy G away out of spite?
Ooh, well, I think it's both, because probably the way Robert Kraft found out about it and Tom Brady bringing it to him, I think Tom Brady flexed his card with the owner.
So it's a good time to play it.
Yeah, right. So he never had to play it before. So he played it. He said, I'm going to show you. So that brought the friction. So now Brady was in Belichick's crosshairs. Mm-hmm. So, they talk about with the interviews of different players. That's when he started to treat them different. That's when he started to go a little bit overboard, look for little things. Then also Belichick said, okay, you're going to get Jimmy G. You're going to get Jimmy G out of here. We're going to get your little friend, your personal trainer up out of here. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's tit for tat, this, and this. So now you're infighting in there and petty, your pettiness level is going up like 10,000%. And then, Robert Kraft doubling down with choosing his player over the coach, right? And trading Jimmy G. It was over after that. It was just a matter of time. It was not going to be a good ending.
How much of this has to do with Bill Belichick having gotten away with it before? Obviously not traded away the best at any position like he tried to do with Tom Brady, but Belichick was notorious for trading guys a year or two before they dropped off, before they had to pay him again. How much of it was he got away with it before and thought he could do it at quarterback too?
He had the full runway to do it, and you just don't mess with the quarterback. You got to think when the Patriots first burst onto the Super Bowl scene, he cut Lawyer Malloy, who was a New England Patriot guy from when they were he went to the Super Bowl when they lost to Green Bay. He was a Bill Parcells guy. He cut Lawyer Malloy like the week of the first game, and then Buffalo signed him. And they remember Buffalo beat him like 31-0. And then obviously the Patriots went on and won the Super Bowl. But that's from him. Richard Seymour was able to leave in free agency. He didn't want to re-up with Randy Moss, and then Randy Moss, still had, productive years. And, numerous players remember David Givens, the receiver, Branch, their receiver. Everybody had to leave. And so you see this, but you could sell it to the owner because they drafted and developed so well, right? They got Wes Welker, in the free agency deal. He went, and they got Dan Amendola from St. Louis at that time, or the Rams at that time. And he came in and he played a role. Then you had crazy Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski. So you were able to dominate the middle of the field. And then also kind of, you know, they played Aaron Hernandez at times at running back. They were doing all types of stuff. So it's sellable because everything was working.
Skarnecki was really good for a long time.
Right. And he'd be here, retire, come back, win a Super Bowl. So everything was working. And then all their coaches were going other places and, you know, winning Super Bowls. And then if not, then they would come back and just, you know, rinse and repeat. But from there on, those crosshairs were on Tom Brady. And then the fact that Brady left and then won a Super Bowl and changed Tampa's whole organization to even to where now Baker Mayfield is able to go. Baker Mayfield is benefiting off of Tom Brady being there, mm-hmm. right? The structure and showing them what a winner, what it takes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And how one person can galvanize and organize, turn a perennial loser. Now, granted, they won with you know, Tony Dungy was there and they had the Super Bowl. But I'm just saying, from just known, Tampa Bay has been known overall as like a losing organization. Mm-hmm. He comes in and changes everything. That makes an owner look at that head coach a lot different. You saw the change in Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Looked more happy. Was out there more. He had that podcast that him and Gronkowski would do once a week after practice. Gronkowski, they were like two bros. They were like, you know, in the kiddie pool, all mm-hmm. that stuff. The stuff that they couldn't do, it didn't affect them on the field. It was always so that you got to be football 100% of the time. You can't do off the field stuff. You can't do interviews. There you go.
So if Baker Mayfield benefited from Tom Brady being in Tampa, was Mac Jones hurt by Tom Brady being in New England? How much of that carries over from Belichick just kind of spiting Tom Brady to some degree, want to do it his way, and then just not ever getting over it and continuing the same thing with Mac Jones?
I think Mac Jones I think he benefited from Tom Brady because he made the Pro Bowl his first year. I think where they lost their way was they weren't able to surround Mac Jones with the talent. Even Brady always did, you know, made chicken salad out of chicken, you know, of talent around him. But then also he didn't have the offensive coaches that would help him young and early in his career. People forget Tom Brady didn't play his first year.
Right.
Then Drew Bledsoe gets hurt. Boom. He's ready to go. But they would give him bits and pieces at a very small doses. Mm. And so they threw Mac Jones in there. Mac Jones is a different personality, right? Obviously, you hear all this stuff about him and his personality and the way he acts and all that. It just was not a good situation. So I think it hurt Mac Jones a little bit following Tom Brady, but coming out of the draft, you would think if there was a quarterback that could be successful at New England following Tom Brady, it was Mac Jones. Why? He played for Nick Saban. Bill O'Brien.
How similar and different are Belichick and Saban? Because I feel like we throw them in the GOAT conversation, deservedly so. And I feel like we know about the relationship.
Yeah.
Are they the same guy? Are they different?
They got a lot of similarities, but they're different. Hmm. I mean, you ain't gonna see Bill Belichick doing an electric slide in anybody's living room.
Fair.
They have to be different because the NFL is choosing players. College players are choosing you. Mm-hmm. You have to be more of a salesman. But their structure and the demands that they put on their players and their coaches and the way that they, you know, take football serious, they're completely the same. Mm-hmm. Different personalities, and that's the way, and that's probably why they worked so well together. They're both extremely hard workers. They're both, you know, motivated, you know, personally, and they're all about winning. So you can respect if there's different personalities. I mean, you know, we even had that, you know, in our teams here in Nebraska and different teams that were actually, you know, winners in the NFL. Like, guys go about it differently, but you know, if they're doing the things in the right way or doing it for the purpose to win games, you don't care how you get there. Mm. That's what makes it, you know, that's what makes a team, and that's what makes two of the greatest coaches have so much respect for each other. Because when Bill Belichick was cutting his teeth in Cleveland and learning how to be a head coach, he trusted Nick Saban as a defensive coordinator. And he knew that everything that he wanted would get done. And then Nick Saban learned from Bill Belichick, and then obviously went on, you know, and they both went their, you know, two different or both ways. And they had a battle a couple times in the league, but, you know, they're definitely there's a lot more similarities than differences.
Is Belichick done?
No, here's a great thing about Belichick. It's pretty cool. Not pretty cool, but this lets you know that he's trying to get back in, and he will get. I mean, he's got to get hired. I just saw where he's going to be on with Pat McAfee for the draft. But what it lets you know is that, okay, I hear what you're saying. He knew about this. So he's smart enough to say, you know what? I'm going to go and partner with somebody that's the complete opposite. And I'm going to be on his show. You talk about Pat McAfee and Bill Belichick. It's a beneficial, you know, relationship or, you know, business deal. But it's going to benefit Bill Belichick a little bit more because I'm assuming they're going to see a different side of Bill Belichick that wasn't obviously portrayed in that article or assumed throughout the league. So that's how it lets me know that if he's going to come back and it's not over.
And that's going to be a tricky line to walk too, because again, like you said, the reason he wasn't hired is because of everything that made him successful. You have to tweak it, but you can't change it, right? You have to adapt more so than you have to change, because if you try to be someone you're not, you don't deserve fake to be hired.
Right. Yeah. And I think he's just number one, it keeps his name out there.
Yeah.
Which it always should be. Number two, you're going to see another side of him. Instead of this article being the last thing that you hear or read about Bill Belichick, you'll see Bill Belichick in person, and that's the last thing you're going to talk about. Now, you're going to be able to say, oh, man, Bill Belichick is actually, you know, I'm assuming he has dry humor. I'm sure he has great insight on the draft and draft prospects and comparisons of all the great players he coached before to whoever's coming in the league. He's going to give his opinion on, assuming, the quarterback's position specifically, so forth and so on. And so I think I don't think he's never going to change who he is, because he doesn't need to.
Right.
But I think he's going to be able to adjust a little bit. And he also had said he was willing to adjust. I mean, he was assuming that he was coming back to New England. Mm-hmm. Now, it probably isn't an ideal situation. And I think Robert Kraft realized, listen, if we're going to do it, if this is the last year, we might as well do it this year.
Right.
And we're not.
Why let it fester another year?
And we're not a very good team. Right. We weren't very good last year. We probably won't be very good this year. Jared Mayo already has in his contract that he is a coach in waiting. Let's just do it. Why wait anymore? So I think
you're not getting 15 this year.
Right. You're not getting 15 this year. And you don't want to be just say like you're at 8. Then you're like, okay, now we got to bring him back for at least another 8 or 7. And then next thing you know, you lose.
You only win 5.
Right. And then you lose Gerard Mayo to another team in the next offseason. So I think it's just became apparent that it was a time, and it was based on how the team was playing. Now, if they were close to a playoff run this year or snuck in the playoffs, Bill Belichick might still be there.
Would that have been the right decision? Because if you know the relationship is this bad and you managed to squeak a playoff appearance out of it, like, yeah, you still made the playoffs. There's still, you know, some magic or some spark there. But I guess if the relationship's that bad, I would look at it as we got lucky. Let's go out on a positive note before it gets worse.
I totally agree. I mean, if it's a personal thing to the point that you say these things to another owner, it doesn't matter if you won a playoff game or won the Super Bowl. It's not going to work. You're going to eventually break off, and you know it just kind of worked his way out. I'm still surprised Bill Belichick is not a head coach somewhere in the NFL. I mean,
even an assistant, right? Yeah. Like, analyst.
No, he's a head coach. He is a guy that, like I said, the Washington Commanders that's where he's from. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a great situation for him. The Washington Commanders need him. They need somebody that not only commands and demands respect, but has earned it. And it makes your franchise look different. You got to think where the Commanders have went through the last like 3 or 4 years, from, you know, Daniel Snyder trying to extort owners. Then you have the whole, you know, I guess, you know, sexual harassment cases, both internally in their offices, and then when they went away to do the photo shoots, all that stuff, to, you know, lying about the number of PSLs he sold and the tax, all just there's 3 or 4 years of just a black cloud. Look,
and that's just the ownership level.
That's right. That's the ownership level. And then on top of the stadium and not upgrading their state, all that stuff, right? Changing the name, fighting with, you know, to keep the Redskin name, getting told you need to change it. We're not changing it. Okay, we're the Washington football team. Then now we're at the Commanders. It's just been a catastrophe. Well, if Bill Belichick goes there, that changes everything. Like, okay.
It re-legitimizes them.
A new owner, a new look for at least the next 3 or 4 years. We got a guy that we know that is not with all the funny stuff. And this is nothing against Dan Quinn. There's nothing against him. But Bill Belichick changes the face of your organization like that. It changes the thought of people when they're going to have to, you know, re-up their seats or want to buy season tickets and brings excitement there. Now, sure, you know, Dan Quinn does. Not as much as Bill Belichick, even though the personalities are different.
Right. And again, I go back to the word re-legitimizes, because that's a proud franchise that has a lot of history and a lot going for it. You need anything positive you can get. Like, Dan Quinn's fine, but he's a retread.
Yeah.
Not exactly awe-inspiring. So if you want to start lifting that black cloud, you have to give people hope for what's possible.
Right.
You know, would it have worked? Would it not have worked? We might never know. But the way to part the clouds is to give people hope.
Yeah, but you know, they have their reasons. And if you look at some of when the Cowboys played the Commanders, it seems like Dan Quinn knew he was getting the job way back then. Now, I don't know if that was artificial intelligence, but it looked like it was a pretty credible source where he was, you know, said that he was going to be the coach. But you know, for Dan Quinn, I was like, look, your defense's last performance is probably not ideal to look unprepared. But, you know, a lot of times coaches that know that they're getting head coaching jobs are, I wouldn't say they're coaching to lose, but they're not as intense and they're not as detailed. And you see it a lot of times where coaches get jobs. They don't look very, you know, they don't perform very well in playoff games. But nevertheless, though, that's this article. If you get a chance, for all the listeners out there, if you get a chance to read it, it is, whew, I can just imagine the next time you see him. You know what's crazy? There's dudes that, like, I played with at Nebraska, and, you know, you hear him say, you know, you hear stuff that you know, they say about you, see him. A lot of times I don't really say anything, but you just see him just be looking at him like, man, I like, oh, you lucky I don't just come over and just hit you upside the head with a baseball bat. You know what I'm saying? Or something like that, but just,
they're your teammates, you love them, but sometimes you got to
get it. Yeah, it is what it is. But, I mean, that's obviously being way too aggressive. But you think about a guy like Bill Belichick, like, okay, you can think what you want. We won 7 Super Bowls together. We dominated the league for 20 years. You were definitely down with Spygate and all this other stuff. They probably know each other, know more about each other than...
And their wives.
Yeah. You know, they know.
Or Robert Kraft's people in Florida.
Yeah. They know, you know, and then it's like, it seemed like it was pretty amicable when they left, right? As much as it's awkward, obviously.
Right.
But then you're going to just stop me from getting a job? You're going to call up and let me get a job? Like,
it's one thing to say that stuff off the record, but you're going to say it on the record?
It's off the record or not, man. You stopped me from literally because you knew he was going to Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
He said, this dude called us and listen, do not hire him at all.
Not, I wouldn't recommend you to hire him.
It would almost to the point where Robert Kraft says, listen, I ain't going to be your friend no more. You hire, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you do this, I'm not talking to you anymore. And he didn't do it. That's the thing that I would probably be so mad at. I actually, look. When coaches coach together, you're around each other way.
Turn holiday travel from stressful to rewarding. Rakuten helps you save big on travel. They give you cash back when you book with sites like Expedia, Best Western, and Hertz. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other rewards like airline miles, credit card points, and hotel loyalty programs. Rakuten partners with over 3,700 stores, including Away Luggage, Ray-Ban, and Macy's, so you can be prepared with all the travel essentials and, of course, cute fits for your trip. Keep the rewards going with cash back on holiday gifts for friends and family. With Rakuten, you'll never miss out on savings at your favorite stores. The stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Join for free and start your shopping at Rakuten.com or use the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
Too much. So, of course, you know, Robert Kraft is going to have there's a lot about Bill Belichick he loves and respects, and there's some things he probably obviously doesn't like. That's just normal, right? Because mm-hmm. there's always, you're always going to have, success is a lot of times built on good friction. Yeah. So it's there. And they were horrible the last 2 years. So and Tom Brady went and won a Super. So there's a little bit of animosity. And plus, when Brady came back, he's very tight with Bill, with Kraft. And obviously, they talk more freely now. So that mm-hmm. this, it's the last thing that you're hearing from one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, so forth and so on. Because remember, when Tom Brady retired, they thought he was going to go back to New England for a year. Mm-hmm. And he probably said, I ain't coming back if that dude's here. So, I mean, there is a lot of things there. But I would never think that you're going to call up somebody else and be like, man, do not hire this dude. Do not do this. Do not. It seems like if you do this or else type of conversation. So I would never think an owner would do that.
You've always said they're petty, though.
Not that petty. If they won that, when they won that much, not really? That petty. Coaches are petty.
Okay.
Owners aren't that petty. The owners, unless...
Owners, coaches, GMs, pettiest rankings.
That's good. I think the owners are number three.
Okay.
I would say coaches are the pettiest. Because they, and here's why, especially in the league, and at least when I was... They know they'll be around a lot longer. This is what I always tell players is you got to play the game within the game. These coaches will be around a lot longer than you. And they all talk. And they all have favors. And so they're petty. They just are. That's why you see like a coach goes and like a coach leaves New England, he bring like all them dudes with him. Right. You kind of play the role. It's politics or whatever you want to call it. So I would say coaches than GMs. There's some GMs that are wild though, man. that they say some stuff like you just like outlandish. Like, dang, you really even like? You remember when they asked the one it was a Des Bryant like asked us was your mom a prostitute? Like,
right?
Remember that? Yeah. Right? And it was like on record. Right? Yeah. It had to be a GM or something. Like they like some of these guys are so comfortable talking like that, and so that's not petty. I call that ignorant, but GMs are a little bit petty in the sense of, you know, if you signed a big deal and then say you didn't work, there's two different ways. If you signed a big contract and you just didn't work, say you caught the injury bug, generally they'll give you no chance. If you sign a big deal and you are an a-hole in the mm-hmm. locker room, or not very well liked, or say you just get lazy or something like that, they'll put the dime out to make sure that like you're poisonous meat. Mm. But the coaches are very petty. Coaches are petty, boy. I mean, coaches are so petty that, and here's why they're petty. Like some coaches, are, I guess, quote unquote, set you up for failure or not do something. They'll throw you right underneath that bus out there.
Dang.
And then if the coordinator or whatever find out that you're right, but I hold a grudge. I was very fortunate. I never had anything to do that. Greg Williams was mad at me for a while, and he was petty because I was going to go to Washington. You know what I mean? Danny Smith. I'm close with him.
Okay.
He was a special teams coach. He was all set. Greg held a Greg Williams is petty. He is petty. And we had a truce or whatever. We saw each other in the airport bar. It was the funniest thing ever. He was petty, man. I was like, dang. Him and Charlie Cassidy were petty. Mm-hmm. And the reason why Charlie Cassidy was petty, because I called him out where. And actually ended up working out a little bit better because I was able to, you know, when I lost it, whereas like, you know, I went in for ankle surgery, just a cleanup. Like they did reconstruction. Listen, hey, I didn't sign this. You know what I mean? And then so when I came out of under anesthesia or whatever, the doctor was like, "Hey, I'm sorry, I didn't know this was coming out today," and he was trying to trade me and Jamie Sharper. But Greg Williams is petty though. When Greg first came in, we were like, "Who is this dude?" Like, right?
Acting a fool.
Yo,
off the chain.
He was wilding right from the get, like the first meeting, and he had a leg up on us because they beat us in the Music City Miracle. He was defensive coordinator, and I'll never forget the first meeting. So it was Phil Hansen, who played in the league like 14 years, veteran, you know, NFLPA dude. I sit next to him. And so he was on the team, and like Bruce Smith and all them dudes, they left. But Phil was, he's like, "I'm lifer." So Greg Williams comes the very first meeting in the offseason. He comes in. We were like the number three defense or something, you know, last year. And he put up all this thing. He was like, "That ain't nothing. You guys really ain't that good. This, this, and this. If you were that good on defense, I wouldn't be." I mean, he just went off. It just like pretty much all you guys ain't nothing, and all your jobs are on the line. I'd like to cut all you guys. He's like, "If I could bring all my guys from Tennessee in, I would," right? I was like, "Dang, this dude," he was wilding too. And then all the coaches were wilding, you know, because he brought his boys from Tennessee. Then he hired a lot of young coaches, and they were off the charts. It's all of them.
Just one of them.
All of them. And then he passed away. And so Greg, at first, he was very abrasive. It was like, "Dang, can we even talk to this dude?" You know what I mean? And, you know, I was inside linebacker in the 3-4. Then I moved to kind of like a will or whatever. And his defense was very different, right? He had a lot of calls. It was very aggressive. So it was a little bit of a 46 defense, a little bit of a bear defense. And then it was just crazy coverages. I mean, and so I'll never forget, we were in red zone. And he used to do some stuff like, so he would, it was pretty, I understood, I liked the way he did it. So instead of having, you know, you stretch, warm up, group work, 9-on-7, blitz period, inside, outside run, he would just go stretch, warm up, goal line one day.
Into
yeah,
it.
You're right. So just keep you on edge. So everything we did was like, at first, it was like nothing else. You know, guys that came from it, nothing else. But what it did was keep you always on edge. Mm-hmm. Like, at first, you felt like you're on eggshells. But then it was like, okay, I understand. Mm-hmm. So once I kind of understood his method of, you know, madness, he went, and then, you know, kind of, you got to earn your stripes, right? So we had a breakthrough, you know, like where he's, you know, finally like, "All right, this dude can play a little bit." You know what I mean? And I was like, okay, you know, after a while, some of the stuff he would say, you know, him and Jerry Gray would say, it was just like, I was like, I used to be like, "Dang," I called my dad. I was like, "Yo, I've never seen somebody talk to like a grown man." Like, I was like, "Dad, I've never seen it, man. How did this dude not punch this coach?" And we had a defensive end named Eric Flowers. And he was from Arizona State. Third first round pick. And I don't know what, he was obviously good in college, but he ran at like 265 pounds. He had ran like a 4.5. And Eric, I used to call him Bookman, Buffalo Butt, because he had just like a BBL. That's all you seen. Like, I used to say, "Eric, man, you like a butt bomb." I mean, his butt was so big, like this, like, and powerful. Like, it was just, I'd be in a stance and you just be seeing. That's what you would see, literally. He had toothpick legs. This is the funniest thing about
it. Big old can.
He had no calf, and then, like, you know, legs or whatever, but this did the backs. You know what I mean? And he was yoked up top, but just backs. Just, you know what I mean? And every
little top head.
Yeah. And the D lineman, Pat Williams, that's my boy too, Pat Williams. I used to call him Project Pat, right? Because he would make fun of Eric because he's a rookie. Every time he walked, we'd be like, "Ba-boom, ba-boom," right? So Eric, right, loved video games. So I think he was married at the time, had a baby. So Eric's a great dude. So the new Madden used to come out, I think, during August, during, you know, training camp. And we would have curfew. So what he would have his wife do, because you'd have to get on the list or whatever. I don't want to play no video games, you know. So he would have his wife go and get it. And then if your, you know, wife or a significant other came to the, you know, thing, not to stay the night. Yeah. If you need to drop off something, they let you do it. So he'd be playing video games. And so, you know, Eric would be on this game. And so, like, we had a little players lounge. We had a PlayStation in there. Eric would be killing everybody. Nobody playing video games, right? We're trying to survive.
Right.
And so we played New Orleans, first game of the season. And we start out hot on defense. Eric gets a sack going against Willie Rove. I mean, obliterates Aaron Brooks, right? But when you when I'm playing linebacker, I don't really realize what everybody else is doing. I ain't thinking nothing, right? And we got broke off by New Orleans, right? Ricky Williams and Kyle Turley, they were running that thing. They was getting after it a little bit. And so then, you know, a couple more games, we won one. And so we say we were like 1-3. Well, this is when we had VHS tapes. So the third down tape was supposed to be after Thursday's practice, I think. Well, they ain't get us the third down tapes. So us being young and dumb, we waited like 30, 45 minutes. And I think they did this on purpose, right? Everybody just shot at home. Now, we had veterans. Kenny Irvin, 11 years in the league. Big Bang Hank Henry Jones left. Everybody left. So we come back, and the next morning, the tapes are still there. The tapes are there. I'm like, oh, Jerry Gray going to be off the hook. So, you know, he's up there just joking around and all this. This is like when, you know, we're talking about basketball. And then he just went off on us.
Flipped the switch.
See, that's why we ain't winning. Third down tapes is here, right? Third down tapes ain't here. This. You guys ain't studying. And then he started talking in third person. And this one I told Phil Hans, I said, listen, this is about to, I was like, this is about to get bad. And see, Jerry couldn't see me, right? Because we had like theater seat, so there wasn't no light up there. I was like, I nudged Phil. I said, this ain't gonna be good, right? So we'd sit up top. And Jerry Gray said, see, I know you guys be in there playing that PlayStation. Guess what? Jerry Gray took it. Now he's talking to Jerry took the PlayStation out. No more games. Bow! Knocked the third down tape over here. He's like, now nobody can watch third down. We're just gonna go out and get our, you know what, kick, this, and this. So everybody picked up the tape. Well, then we went to walkthrough, right? So that's how we started off the morning.
That's like, position meeting?
Yeah, that was the defensive meeting,
okay.
Right? So then everybody going off on us in meetings. And then we had a linebacker coach named Miles Aldridge or whatever, right? Looked like Nick Nolte. He'd be like, linebackers, how long did y'all wait? This. You guys didn't get third down tape? And we were like, no, we was here for an hour. I said, we did watch it. And they were able to look it up, but we was all in trouble. Walking out to walk through. I would never forget this. So the coaches usually go through the training room to go out there. Well, Jerry walks through Jerry really thought he was a player because he would wear a suit to the game and then change another suit. Because when he played, though, it was like Deion and then according to Jerry Gray was a great corner. And he went to the University of Texas. He was a great corner, great player, but he still thought he was a player. So Jerry walks through the locker room after this meeting as we're going, and he's on a hoof. And so where the locker room came out was in one end zone. That's where the offense was. The defense was on the other one for the walkthroughs. So he's walking with us. Eric opens his mouth. He's like, dang, Jerry. He's like, you act like you on your period. Yo, right? And the everybody starts laughing. And Jerry looks at him. He's like, you GD right, I'm on my period. He's like, you know what? I'm going to be on my period till you start making some damn plays, this, and just went off on Eric. I'll never forget this. From the 50-yard line to the goal line. Then he snapped in and went to walkthrough and then went off on him during walkthrough. I'd never seen anything like that in my life, man. Just Eric, he should have just kept his mouth shut. He's like, dang, Jerry, you're on your period. And then Jerry took like three or four steps and everybody's laughing. He's like, oh, okay. Yeah, you know what? I'm be on my period. He started making plays. I was like, and then he went over his stats, right? And here's the best part. the next day, he's like, yeah, I got Eric Flowers up here talking about I'm on my period. He's like, you know what? Let's look at your stats. He's like, you ain't did. Yeah. He's like, you ain't did nothing since you had a sack in the first game. You ain't got a tackle. You ain't did this. He's like, you went one game without a stat. He's like, you only got two tackles. I was like, dang. I would have to fight Jerry. I would have to fight it, man. We would at least had to have a fake fight.
At least yeah. words.
Right. Jerry was no punk, though. Listen, here's another funny story. We'll tell you before we go to break. We played the Tennessee Titans. Wait, hold on. Who was it? Who was it that we lost to? So anyway, it was an intense game, right? And Jerry's defensive coordinator, we might have been, I know it was a night game. I know this for a fact. It might have been doing Mike. Remember Mike Cherry, the ref?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
He was the lead. Oh boy. He was the lead ref. And they had messed up some calls. So in Buffalo, if you watch the Buffalo games, like you walk up and you right next to the all the teams and the refs come in. Well, Jerry calls his defenses. He don't be in the box. He be right here and be just talking noise to everybody. Well, him and Mike Cherry got into it. I mean, cussing at each other. He called Mike Cherry and Uncle Tom.
No.
Yo, these two throwing hands on site right there.
Oh my God. Cherry.
As we're walking up the ramp, first of all, I was too tired. I was like, I ain't getting in there. They going at it. And then Jerry was like, till next time. Till next time. He's like, till next time. He's like, every time I see you, we fight. Mike Cherry was like, bring it on in. Yeah, it was. I mean, they were wild up there, man. Greg and them was wild. They were wild. But I'm going to tell you this, though. So when I got traded from Buffalo, I was mad. Because I felt like it was handled wrong. And I was invested in the city of Buffalo and the team. And I started to really take off. And I was cheap at that time, you know. Wasn't asking for much. My contract was up. Jerry signed one of his former players, Eddie Robinson Jr., and he'd been in the league forever. You know, he was on his last – I mean, he was on fumes. The dude can, you know.
Can play dead.
Yeah, if we were going to compete, I know I was going to beat him out. Matter of fact, Danny Smith was saying the same thing. Then I got traded, got down to Houston, started getting some – you know, started getting my – you know, in my fifth year, you know, got re-upped. And I just started saying something in the – I was talking junk about him in the papers. Well, Greg was mad about that. You know what I'm saying? Now, here's how the football gods work. So we're playing Buffalo in Houston. And I've been talking junk all week. Like, yeah, you guys are going to come down. I'm busting your ass as soon as everybody. Reuben Brown, I'm going to see you. You know what I mean? Had a good game. I didn't play well, but did decent. Got a unsportsmanlike conduct for taunting on my sideline against one of my favorite Peerless Price. We boys.
Peerless, yeah.
Yeah, we wolfing because Peerless going to wolf.
Yeah.
I'm wolfing. I got caught. Boom. Two plays later, I made it was a good play. I took on Reuben Brown and kind of spun off, and then I grabbed Travis Henry and got him back by here, by the shoulder pad. Horse collar, 15 plays.
That's 30 yards, Jay.
30 yards. Hey, 90,000 people booing. Get him up out of cover four, safety bust on a bang eight, skinny post. Touchdown, game over. That's it, right? Then we got a bye week, right? That's how bad it was.
Oh, no.
Dom Capers called me in at 7 o'clock the next morning. I was taking some heat. I was taking heat, too.
And Dom sounds like he would give you heat.
Yo, he was giving. He's like, you can't be doing this no more. This is not believing. You better start playing better. I called my dad, man. I ain't going to lie to you. I was crying. I was like, I lost the game. I ain't never did this, and this, right? My dad was like, well, hey, any press is good press, right? He's like, you in the news, right? So we end up losing that game. And then, like when the schedule comes out, I'm like, oh, yeah. So we play at Buffalo next year. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm on a murder session all week. They're like, you need to keep your mouth shut. I ain't say nothing. I had egg on my face. So I think I have the picture, or right where I tackled Travis Henry. Aaron Glenn, who defense coordinator the Lions, was undercovering. I kind of got Travis again. Well, I tackled Travis. Jerry Gray's over there. Jay Foreman, you know you ain't no good. You know this, right? I stood up and was going to say something to him, and then I got diverted. We ended up winning.
Do you know who diverted you?
Seth Payne.
Nice.
Who actually set the bench record at one point in time before it got broke three or four times. And, you know, we had to, you know, he, you know, got me in the right. We ended up winning the game. So Greg,
and then
was,
you started wolfing.
Yeah. No, I didn't say that. Left. I was just drained. Well, Greg was still mad about it. Oh. Danny Smith told me. So this is when I was like done playing or whatever, and I was going to do a NFL internship. Greg nixed it. Like, nah.
He Bob Kraft you, or Bob Kraft Greg Williams.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, Greg nixed it. And I called apologies. I said, look, man, bygones be bygones. No return. No return phone call. All right, Greg, that's cool. I was like, dang, you still mad? You the coordinator. You know what? You good. Well, anyway, he was mad. So I knew he was still mad. Danny Smith told me he was still mad. And he's like, man, I don't know what's up, Greg. He need to get over it. Because Danny was like, man, Greg know he was wrong. You know what I'm saying? We're in the Charlotte airport. And I'm going to Minneapolis. I don't know where Greg's going. I see him, right? And, you know, I'm there a couple hours early or whatever. He's in there. He's at the bar. He's at the bar, right? I slide up right next to him. Hey, man, can I buy you a beer? He looked at me and with big eyes, I was like, we're going to have a conversation. We're going to get through this. He says, what we got to talk about? I said, Greg, listen, man, I know you was mad at me. I said, listen, I was a young dude, man. I mean, I was one of your boys. I went to bat for you. So we had a beer, chopped it up, and bygones would be bygones.
Rest is history?
Yeah. So every time I see Greg, I know he's coaching somewhere, boy. He was giving somebody the business when he's in the UFL. I was like, yeah, that little young dude ain't ready for you. You have got to have tough skin. But what he taught me as far as the pass game and approaching to the game helped in my career, though. And that, so, you know, we talked about Bill Belichick and different coaches. You know, if you just kind of take the emotion out of it, you know, then, you know, you'll see some good in it. And it was never, I don't think it was ever personal with Greg. I just felt like he was in a power position. He was like, nah.
Greg just wasn't having it.
Nah, man. He was he was salty. You never know. I would have been running that 46 defense or something, man. But I got a lot of respect for Greg. I mean, obviously the bounty gate up in New Orleans. Well, you know, he was off the charts. That was Greg 100%. I wanted him out.
Did you need the airport beer to be off the charts, apparently?
No. But you know what? We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to tell you about, I'm not going to tell you the coach, but when we played a team, this is probably the best pregame speech we had prior to a game. And it's one of those guys, man. And they were on the staff in Buffalo. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.